Hof Zion Sivan, Wednesday the 29th of June, Rabbi Dovid Kaplan, Eternal Effects of Your Actions.
Wait a minute. The Mishnah Pirkei Avos, Mishnah says, if a Zorbit Mitzvah Kalaka the Chamura, Shainat Yadea Matan Svarin Shal Mitzvahs. You have to be careful, be conscientious with the Mitzvah Kalaka the Chamura, Shainat Yadea Matan Svarin Shal Mitzvahs. So, the Poshup Shad is, obviously we don't know the star of the Mitzvahs, and each Mitzvah has some sort of spiritual component that they're the parts of the neshama, same way that the body needs various vitamins, a little bit more different minerals and vitamins, some more, some less, different types of sustenance. So neshama needs the same thing. It's usually the pshat, how they explain the pshat. We don't know. You don't know what the effect of the mitzvah is on the neshama. You don't know the effect of the star of the mitzvah. Mice said it's a little bit difficult to understand because later on it says in Pirkei Avos, the Sara Agra. So to a certain extent, we do know the star of the mitzvahs, because the star of the mitzvahs is relative to the proportional to the effort that's put into it. That's the star that we're going to get for the mitzvahs. But here, Mishnah tells you, "Shein atayu de matan svarin shel mitzvahs." So the question is, why did the Mishnah say the word "Shein atayu de matan svarin shel mitzvahs"? It could have just easily said "Shein atayu de svarin shel mitzvahs." Why does it say "Shein atayu de matan svarin shel mitzvahs"? I want to go into an area. There's an idea here. It is one of the most powerful ideas that I've ever heard in Torah. And I think that's something we should all take a lot of chizuk from. Imagine the following scenario. A guy knocks on the door of a hardworking middle-class Jew. And struggling, you know, making parnasa, paying tuitions. Man knocks on his door. He says, "Listen, my father is deathly ill. We need $50,000 to do an emergency surgery. Can you help me out?" He says to him, "Look, $50,000 is a lot of money. Come back in a week. I'll see what I can do for you." He says, "Thank you very much." Guy goes for an entire week, goes running around, starts with his relatives, his friends, his neighbors, $50 here, $25 here, chai here. Yep. Puts together. The end of the week, he's got $50,000. The man comes back then. He says, knocks on the door a week later, says, can you help me out? He says, "Yeah, Baruch Hashem, I was matzliach. I've got the $50,000 for you. Can you have the surgery?" He says, "Yeah," he bursts into tears, gives him a bear hug. He says, "Thank you very much. You've saved my father's life. How could I ever thank you?" He says, "Don't worry about thanking me. The ikar is, he should be gesund, should be matzliach. That's the best star I could possibly have." Guy says, "Thank you very much." He takes the $50,000, gives him another bear hug, leaves the house tearfully, goes out into the street. He flags down a cab, gets into the cab, goes off to the airport, flies out to Las Vegas, and he gambles all the money away. There's no father, no surgeon, no hospital, all stories of Bubba Mice. Scenario number one. Scenario number two, guy knocks on the door of the wealthiest Jew in the world. Goes to the wealthiest Jew in the world, says, "Mr. Gatesberg, my father is deathly ill. We need $50,000. So Gatesberg says to him, "Go speak to my secretary's secretary." He goes to the secretary's secretary, knocks on the door. Before he can say a word, she says to him, "How much do you need?" "Was it $50,000?" She writes out a check, gives him $50,000. Guy takes the check, pays the surgeon, and the father has the surgery. Question, who gets greater schar? The Jew in scenario number one, who ran around for an entire week, he didn't sleep, put together the money, and then he was deceived by a professional confidence man? Or the Jew in scenario number two, Mr. Gatesberg in scenario number two, who never even picked up the pen to write out the check, but it was his money that did the surgery. And the father was cured. Who gets greater schar? Who gets greater schar? Right? Tricky. Right? Tricky. Vum sara agra. Vum sara agra. Right? Really, he ran around, but nothing happened. It's not his responsibility. He was nanas. Right? That's also mitzvah. Nanas. Okay. So the answer obviously is, you're right, halfway. The answer is that there are two aspects of schar. There are two types of schar. Mm-hmm. Attention you carefully. Matan schorin shel mitzvahs. Don't say sheinat ha'edea schorin shel mitzvahs. There's something called matan schorin. Matan schorin shel mitzvahs means there's a dimension of the mitzvah which is a matona. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us a matona. That means that sometimes in the mitzvah itself, there's a ripple effect, so to speak, of the mitzvah. You get schar for the ripple effect as well. There's a matan schar according to the Thumtzara Agra, and there's also going to be the ripple effect of the mitzvah that you get the schar for. So for example, this man who was now cured, he had surgery and he was cured. So he decides, well, since HaKadosh Baruch Hu cured him, he's got a new lease on life. So what does he do? He decides he's going to devote the rest of his life to Ribbono Shel Olam. So what does he do? He builds a yeshiva. And now there are 300 boys learning Torah in his yeshiva every day. Who shares in the schar of these 300 boys learning Torah? That Mr. Gatesburg, who never even picked up the pen to write up the check. He shares in the schar of the Talmud Torah in the yeshiva. Let's be dramatic. One of these bachurim becomes a superstar, and he marries the daughter of a big Rosh Yeshiva, and a year later they have a baby, and this baby becomes Mashiach. Who shares in the schar? I mean, why not? If we're already there, we may as well bring him. What? Who shares in the schar of a Mr. Gatesburg who never even picked up the pen to write out the check? What's happening here is the scholar goes, Matan Schar, there's a gift in the mitzvah, which you might feel you don't even deserve, because it had nothing to do with you. You see, Chazal say that if a person loses money and an ani finds the money that you lost, so you get schar for tzedakah. What did you do? You lost it, fell out of your pocket, which is, by the way, what the Mefarshim say. All of Korach's property was swallowed up, so the tzaddikim shouldn't end up with it. The Korach shouldn't get schar. The tzaddikim should benefit from his property. So it was all got swallowed up. All the benefit is there. Somebody found your pen. Somebody found your money. Somebody found your ring. Somebody found your watch. What benefit is? Well, you did nothing. Doesn't matter. There's a schar. Even if there's a byproduct of your actions, you get the schar. It's called matan schar shel mitzvos. Gwarim Psachim says on daf nidal on base. So it says there are seven things nobody knows. Tana Rabbanan Shiva Dvarim Mechusim Ibnei Adam Elo Ed Yom Amisav Yom Enchama Vomek Hadin Veinad Yom Ablibo Shal. Nobody knows what his friend is thinking, because if you did, he probably wouldn't be your friend. And therefore, there's seven things where it says nobody knows. So Rashi says on Omek Hadin. What's Omek Hadin? Nobody knows Omek Hadin. Says Rashi on Omek Hadin. The Omek Hadin, says Rashi, two Pirushim. Number one, harov to'im bo. Most people make a mistake in Omek Hadin. Talking about Dine Momenus, very difficult to understand Dine Momenus, your taina, his taina, what the real truth is, very difficult. Inami, says Rashi, another chat, Omek Hadin ha'osid. The Omek Hadin in the future. What's so? The Omek Hadin la'osid lovo. What's difficult? Omek Hadin la'osid? The answer is, because there's such a cheshbin, la'osid, there's such a cheshbin, and not only what you did, there's an achashment and the effects of what you did. Okay, unbelievable maisa happened. It was later confirmed by somebody else. There was a man who was a man goes to a doctor. For a man goes to a doctor. The doctor diagnoses him. He tells him he's got the machla. So he says to the man, "Look, there are two choices here. You could either let the disease run its course, and within 6 months you'll die relatively painlessly." Or you could begin a series of treatments, and it'll extend your life 3 or 4 years, but it's going to be very painful, very grueling. The man says to the doctor, "Okay, I have to go speak to my rov." He goes to Rav Moshe Feinstein's himself. Goes to Rav Moshe, says to Rav Moshe, "These are two options." So Rav Moshe says, "Okay, let's make a cheshbon. In the next 3 or 4 years, how many Yemeni Hashmer Rabbas will you answer? How many times will you put on tefillin? How many guests will you have for Shabbos? How many daf Gemara are you going to learn? It's a double portion that you have to try to keep yourself alive as long as possible." Okay. He goes back to the hospital. He says to the doctor he wants to go through the treatment. So the doctor says to him, "Okay, it's going to take 6 weeks to set up all the chemicals and all the stuff. Come back in 6 weeks." Fine. Guy comes back 6 weeks later, goes into the hospital. He sees at the end of the corridor, he goes to the doc, knocks on the door. Dr. Taub, he knocks on the door, says, "Come in." He walks in, he sees there's a man sitting behind the desk, his little beard, big black yarmulke, sits this, he goes, "I'm sorry, I'm looking for Dr. Talbot, I'm sorry." He goes, no, it's me." He takes a look, he says, it's the doctor." He says, "What's going on here?" He says, "Listen, I'm going to tell you something, I've been a doctor for many years. In all the years I've been a doctor, you're the first patient I've ever had who's opted to go through the pain option. I went to speak to your Rabbi Feinstein, and he explained to me the importance of a mitzvah, the importance of being a Jew. I become a Baal Tshuva as a result." I want to ask you a question. Rabbi Moshe Feinstein Zatzal, Beruach Kocho, when he was making a cheshbin of all the mitzvahs this man's going to do, did he have in mind also that he's going to be makar of this doctor's going to be influenced? Every time this doctor keeps the Shabbos, this man shares in the schar of the Shabbos. Every single thing that happens now in this doctor's life This Jew now shares it. What did he do? All he did was talk about with his own concerns. Yet that's called matan schoran shel mitzvah. There's a schar that you get in the mitzvah as a byproduct of what you've done. And therefore, a person in their life, whatever you've done, there's a ripple effect for every action. To stop and think about it, the ramifications are mind-boggling. There was an Israeli Baal Tshuva. They asked him how he became a Baal Tshuva. Israeli Baal Tshuva was married, had a family. They asked him what inspired him to become a Baal Tshuva. He said he was once in Dizengoff Square in Tel Aviv. Dizengoff Square in Tel Aviv, a very, very wild place. He was sitting in a club with his friends. His friends were all fried. They're all sitting there in this club at Dizengoff. And he looks out the window and he sees there's a Frum kid, 18-year-old kid, and he's walking. He apparently had to take a shortcut across Dizengoff Square. He says he's looked at this Frum kid, and he notices that this boy, Sheva Bocher, he notices he's looking straight at the ground. He said to his friends, just one second, I have to see what's happening here. He walks outside. He said, this is an eyewitness report, he said, I followed this Bocher across Dizengoff. Not once did he pick his eyes up off the ground. I said to myself, if there's a koch in the Bria that could get an 18-year-old Bocher to keep his eyes down in Dizengoff Square, I have to find out what it is. So I went off to yeshiva, learned Torah, became Baal Tshuva. That Bocher didn't do anything. He did nothing. All he did was look down at the ground. And as a result of looking at the ground, I shouldn't say he did nothing. He did a tremendous thing. He looked down at the ground. As a result, somebody was mushpa, matan schar shel mitzvah, he now shares in the schar of the entire family. Person gives tzedakah. Anytime a person gives tzedakah, we always think of tzedakah in terms of, you know, I gave money to the institution, whatever it was. I think many of you know, I just thought of it now, but I think it's such a powerful thing. You know, Rabbi Pesach Kron has a story about, you've probably seen a story about, this guy walks into a shul in Dallas, Texas. A secular Jew walks into a shul in Dallas, Texas. He says to the rabbi in the shul in Dallas, Texas, I'd like to make a donation to your shul. And he writes out the rabbi a check for $12,000. So the rabbi says to him, listen, it's interesting you came in. Last week, we had a meeting in the shul. We decided we have to start a new education center. And the kehillah is grown. We need to educate the children in the community. The startup costs are $10,000. We haven't got a dime. We're in debt. And we're going to scrap the project. Your $12,000 will get us started. And once we're started, then it's easier to get donors once you're on the way. I only have one question. Why would you come in here sight unseen and donate $12,000? So the guy says to the rabbi, look, I'll tell you, I'm completely secular. I was in Eretz Yisrael, I was in Israel for the first time in my life last month. On the last day of the tour, we were in all very spiritual places. We were in Eilat, and we were in Netanya, very spiritual places. On the last day of our tour, we went to the Kaisel. I was standing at the Kaisel, and I saw there was a Yerushalmi Jew standing there davening. I've never seen a person daven like this in my life. I was mesmerized, I was enchanted watching this man daven. I couldn't get my eyes off him. The next day we flew back to the United States. I thought to myself, I'm going to make a donation in honor of this Yerushalmi Jew. So I called my friend. I said, Max, it's Irv. Do me a favor. A Yerushalmi Jew, would he be most closely aligned with Reform, Conservative, or the Orthodox stream of Judaism? So he says, look, Irv, I don't know much about Judaism myself, but I definitely think we'll go the Orthodox way. So he says to the rabbi, I looked up in the yellow pages, Orthodox shul, you're the first shul that I found. I'm making a $12,000 donation out of that Yerushalmi Jew. I want to ask you a question. Imagine Yerushalmi Jew comes up after Meva Esri. Baruch Shem says to him, okay, Zalman, we're bringing out the ledger. Here's your schar for Torah. Here's your schar for tefillah. Here's your schar for chesed. Here's your schar for tzedakah. He says, Baruch Shem, just one second. I thank you very much for your generosity. But you've got me credited over there with way much more a Torah than I learned. I appreciate your generosity, but I said, no. That's the Torah that's been learned by hundreds of children in a school in Dallas, Texas. The Shami just scratches his head and says, Rebbe Shalom, where's Dallas? The last thing he's thinking of, he goes to the Kaisel to daven, he's got nine daughters that he has to marry off. The last thing he's thinking about is a school in Dallas, Texas. That's from a Kaisel of Kronos. I want to tell you the end of the story. It's unbelievable. In our neighborhood, we have a tzedakah fund in Eretz Yisrael. So we had, in the one Shabbos, we were making appeals at the local shuls. So I spoke in one of the shuls, and I told over this story to try to communicate the idea to people. When you give tzedakah, it's not just the money. You gave 10 pounds, and therefore you gave tzedakah. If that person you gave it to now has better shalom bayis, you share in the star of the shalom bayis. If his children ate a better breakfast, and you now, they now learn better in cheder that day, you share in the star of their breakfast, of their learning. Everything that happens, it's not just about, I'm trying to explain to people, you give tzedakah, tzedakah is not just the tzedakah. So one of the other gabbayim heard me tell this story, so he told the story in another shul in the neighborhood. He tells that shul story in Hebrew, in one of the other neighborhood shuls. After shul, an avrech comes walking over to him, he's got two children with him, the avrech walks over to him, he says, I just want to tell you something. I'm from Dallas, Texas. I was educated in the school that you're talking about. This is the next generation. So you stop and think, Matan Schorin Shul Mitzvahs. Matan Schorin Shul Mitzvahs is walking around on 2 feet now on both sides of you. That's Matan Schorin Shul Mitzvahs. That's the yesod that the Gemara, that the Mishnah is teaching you. Now, there's a flip side. The flip side is like this. The Gemara in Brachas, everybody knows, the Gemara in Brachas Chav Ches says like this. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was on his deathbed. So it says like this, Ukshechol Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai dichtesu talmidav levakro. The talmid who went in to visit Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Kevan sherol sam hisu lifkos. When he saw the talmid, he started crying. Amar lo talmidav, neri Yisrael, omen agamini pati shechosak v'chulu. He said to him, why are you upset? What are you afraid of? Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai said, listen, they're taking me before Melech Machamach, it's not a boser v'dom. I can't bribe my way out of it. The punishment's eternal, the suffering eternal. It's a serious business. Okay. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. What does Chazal tell us? Chazal tells two things about Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. They tell us more. There are two very important things. Number one, Gemara says, no one ever saw Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai walk Dalet Amos without Torah and Tefillah. That means he was always learning, especially in those days when it wasn't written down. Torah Shebaal Peh, he's constantly mishaning his learning. Chazal also say, no one ever greeted Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai first, Afilu Nochri Bashuk. He always greeted everybody first. You know what that means? The crudest, coarsest construction worker with a beer in one hand, a beer in the other hand, a third one in his mouth, a smoking Marlboro. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, no one, even him, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai greeted first. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is in the middle of learning. He's good morning, Roy. Oh, good morning, Ralph. Everywhere he went, he's greeting everybody, and he's learning Torah at the same time. That means that he's completely developed. He's been out of the makom. Devotion is as good as a capacity, he's always learning. And his Bein Adam Mechavero sensitivity is also keenly developed because he's sensitive to all people. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai got to worry about. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is worried any of day is the derech malichin osi. I mean, you know, whoa, what'd you leave for us? What hope is there? So if you listen to the Gemara, listen to the diuk in the Gemara. The Gemara is very precise. The Gemara says, Amrlo Talmidov. Dichnesu Talmidav Levakro. Listen to Rabbi Yochanan. Listen to the wording of the Gemara. It doesn't say they walked in and saw him crying. It says, Kevan Shira Osam Hizchalivkos. When he saw his Talmidim, he started crying. I mean, if you're worried about which Ezad Derech Malichinos, you should be crying already. Why did he only start crying after he saw the Talmidim? It's only after he sees the Talmidim. The answer is, Humasha Amarnu. He starts crying after he sees the Talmidim because he understands that when he sees the Talmidim, if there was something that perhaps he did not communicate in Torah as accurately as he should have, and his Talmidim perhaps take it, misinterpret it, distort it, and pass it on, do something with it which they should have done, he shares in that responsibility. That's all his achrayus. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is not only the idea of his own account. On his own account, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai could be much better. But what about your Talmidim? What about what you left behind you? One second, take it a step further. There's an incredible, and if you look at the Drash Moshe, Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, in Parsha Shlach, Perik Yedalad, Pasuk Chaf Dalad. It's incredible. Rabbi Moshe says like this: "Ve'avdi kolev ekev hoyseruach acheres imo ve'malei acharoi va'biyosi ve'lo oretz asher boshama v'zaro yorishena." So Rabbi Moshe Feinstein says like this: he lays down a yisod. I don't know where he gets the yisod from, and he doesn't say. Rabbi Moshe doesn't say, but if Rabbi Moshe says this is how it is, then this is how it is. Rabbi Moshe says the following: Kolev ben Yefuna is rewarded. They go into Eretz Yisrael and he's rewarded. He gets a chelik in Eretz Yisrael because of his devotion to Rebbe Asher. Ekev haisa ruach acheres imo. Reb Moshe says, so Kolev gets a chelik in Eretz Yisrael. Says Reb Moshe, it can't be. I don't know why he said, he doesn't say why it can't be. He simply says, it cannot be that Kolev was rewarded for effort alone. What happened? The Meraglin came in and started discouraging the people. Kolev turned around and said, no, it's a good land. The Meraglin said, no, we're going to get devastated. We're going to be devastated. And at that point, the people started crying. So what did Kolev accomplish? L'chori accomplished nothing. They said no, he said yes, they said no, and the no's won. So what did Kolev accomplish? L'chori accomplished nothing. Yet we see he gets a reward. So Reb Moshe says, pay attention carefully. It's an unbelievable idea. Reb Moshe says, it cannot be that he got rewarded for effort alone. He does not say why. He says it can't be that it was effort. There had to be a concrete accomplishment. So Reb Moshe says like this. Imagine a person walks into a hospital. The patient is hooked up to a respirator, and a doctor goes over to pull the plug on the respirator. It's interesting why they have the doctor do that. Now, they claim it's not murder. They have the doctor do it. I wouldn't have the doctor do it. I would have the grandchild of the person hooked up to the respirator. I would have him do it. Have the grandchild do it. Then we'll see if they consider it murder or not. Because after all, since it doesn't matter, let the grandchild do it. No, let the anacle go over and pull the plug on the respirator. That they won't do. The doctor pulls the plug as if it's a medical. They're ritzicha. They call it medical treatment. So you're in a walking in a hospital. Doctor's about to pull the plug. And you happen to notice, and you grab his hand to keep his hand off the plug. And you stop him, you keep his hand off the plug for a minute. And eventually he breaks free, and he manages to pull the plug. Did you accomplish anything in that minute? Did you accomplish anything in a minute? The answer is, yes you did. It's called chayesha. Chayesha, for a minute, chayesha. Says Reb Moshe, the same way that there's chayesha of the goof, there's something called chayesha of the nefesh. So when the Meraglim came in, the first thing they did is they say, no, it's not a good idea to go into Eretz Yisrael. At that moment, all of the people become despondent. That despondency on the part of Klal Yisrael is an avera. Because Ribbono Shel Olam said, you're going in, you're supposed to have the bitachon, dor deis, you're supposed to have the bitachon level. You did not maintain that level, you became despondent. Right there, there's a chet on behalf of all the Klal Yisrael. Kolev speaks up. And when Kolev speaks up, everybody's encouraged. For those few moments, there had to be people in Klal Yisrael who did tshuva. There must have been people in Klal Yisrael who said, you know what? Yes, we could go into the land. That's tshuva. They've done tshuva. That's a concrete accomplishment. The Meraglim then speak, and the Meraglim discourage the people once again. So the people become despondent. But for those few moments, this chayesha of the nefesh, for those few moments, there was a concrete, tangible accomplishment. Mimele Kolev gets a star. You know what the ramifications are? The ramifications are lemaisa. You ever have somebody in your home, a baal tshuva, somebody who's a testing out Yiddishkeit, somebody comes into your home to see what a Torah home is like. And you bring them into your home, they sit at your Shabbos table. And they had a wonderful Shabbos. You're very, very hopeful, very encouraged. You even discussed all of life's major issues, evolution, gorillas, everything, all the major issues that are bothering all the great intellectuals running around out there. So you discuss and you talk, you share a little Torah with him, you have some kugel, some soup, wonderful, terrific. Then you see him 2 years later and he has moved zero, not one iota in his Yiddishkeit. You become very discouraged. So what did I spend all the time? I wasted all the time with him. I want to tell you something. If he was sitting at your Shabbos table, and for a few moments at your Shabbos table, he thought to himself, you know what, I really should be doing this. That's your Hurei Tshuva. That's a concrete accomplishment. You cannot measure the accomplishment, particularly in Kiruv Chokin. You cannot measure it by seeing the results of somebody wearing a yarmulke putting on tefillin. The concrete accomplishment of a few moments of commitment, maybe you learn some Torah with it. He was kind of in the midst of the Talmud Torah at your house. That's a concrete accomplishment, whether or not you see down the line, whether or not you see the effects of the concrete effects the way a human being measures it. That's what Ramesh is Mechadish by Kolev. There's something called Chai Shod Nefesh. I just tell you one last story that happened in Eretz Yisrael. Interesting Shaila. There was an activist for Levla, I think Levla Achim, one of the outreach groups in Eretz Yisrael. And he was in the south of Israel. And a missile was shot in from Gaza. And the alarms went off, the sirens went off. So he quickly drove off the side of the road. And as he drove off the side of the road in his panic to get to, he had to drive his way to get to the bomb shelter. And in his panic, he ran over a dog. So he gets out of the bomb shelter, and as soon as he gets out of it, he's accosted by the family. The family of the dog accosts him. They said, listen, you killed our dog. You've harried him, our whole bunch of murder. You killed the dog. He said, well, there was a missile attack. He said, yeah, but you should have been more considerate. Okay. So he started yelling him. Instead of yelling at them, the man didn't say anything, didn't answer. He waited. And slowly but surely, he apologized. He was very apologetic to them. Came over to the house, sat down, started talking to them. Came back the next week, began to visit the family. Eventually, the entire family became friends. Entire family became friends. One second. A few weeks later, family said to them, listen, we are people of means, and we know that you're doing this outreach, it's very important. We would like to donate a room for you to use as a base medrash for Kiruv. Only one condition, we would like to name it after the dog. Right? We want to name our base medrash Base Igor after the dog, right? Okay. I'll shame my dog, right? We were like, I'll shame my dog, we want to name it Base Igor. A real Shiloh. Came through a Yitzhak Zilberstein, Rabbi Yashiv's son-in-law. They asked him, Shiloh, can we name a base medrash after a dog? So Zilberstein said, the dog's name was Igor. Base Igor, name a base medrash after the dog. Listen, he was once asked to Shiloh, there was a dog died, and they wanted to know if they could learn Mishnayis, the Ilui Nishmas, a dog, right? Mishnah begins the Dalit above a Gimel, a dog. That, he said, no, you cannot learn Mishnayis, the Ilui Nishmas. The boy was very upset because his dog died. He said, no, you cannot learn Mishnayis, the Ilui Nishmas, the dog. Here, they wanted to know, can you learn Mishnayis, the Ilui Nishmas, they named the Beis Hashem question. Zilberstein said, the Medrash says that there was once a Jew who had an ox. The Jew sold his ox to a goy. And the ox wouldn't work on Shabbos. So the Jew went over to the ox, and he said, the goy came, he said, Tiny, he said, listen, the ox isn't working on Shabbos. So the Jew came over to the ox, and he whispered to the ox, he said, listen, when you were by me, you couldn't work. Now you own by him, you have to work. So the ox started working. Says the goy was so impressed, he was misgayer, and he became Rabbi Yochanan ben Turta, Rabbi Yochanan of the ox. Appears in Gemara and Yuma Daf Tes. Rabbi Yochanan ben Turta. So Rav Zilberstein said, if you could name a Tana, I'll shame the ox. You could name the Beis Medrash, I'll shame the dog. There's a Beis Medrash in Eretz Yisrael named Beis Igor, and somewhere in the south, if I've never been there, there's a Beis Medrash named Beis Igor. But it's an interesting shaila. What's important here is you see what happened as a result. As a result of his behavior. He didn't. If he would have gotten angry, he would have yelled at them, which he would have been justified in doing. He would have yelled at the people, told the people, you're wrong, I had to get off the road. Because he was patient, because he behaved the way a Bentura is supposed to behave, Mela, he influences the entire family he comes from, and now all of the schar that comes as a result from that family, all their Shemir Shabbos, is all accrued, it's all his benefit on his ledger because of his behavior. That's the Mishnah teaching. Matan Schar and Shul Mitzvah, that Kershaw gives us something that perhaps our logic, we might not deserve, we don't see it. That's the Omek Adin La'Osid, that everybody has in the Osid a tremendous account of mitzvahs and effects, the things that they've accomplished. We may have a tremendous far rating. Okay.